This is Radio Boston. I'm Chris Sidorick. If you've ever wanted to meet a presidential candidate, to paraphrase author Horace Greeley, go north, young folks. At least 10 candidates, including President Trump himself, are in or will be in New Hampshire this week. Here's Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders at a town hall event in Berlin this morning.
I am the only candidate running for president who will tell you a simple truth that you're not going to see on TV or read in the papers. And that simple truth is that no president, not Bernie Sanders or anybody else, can do it alone. Can't do it alone, because we are taking on enormous power in the corporate elite.
A familiar message from Sanders, but is it one that's still resonating with New Hampshire voters? To answer that and to take a deeper look at the candidates in the Granite State, we turn to James Pindle, political reporter for the Boston Globe. James, how's it going?
Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, thanks for being here. So we saw last week everyone's soapbox speeches at the Iowa State Fair. Now this week, everybody's coming to New Hampshire, it feels like. How common is it to see trips in bunches like this, where you have almost half the field basically descending on New Hampshire?
Well, it does come in fits and starts. I think it's important to remember that while Bernie Sanders is spending 2 days in the state, for example, he has not been here or been to New Hampshire in 8 weeks. Not 8 weeks, but since June. So there's been fits and starts. There's also been – it's more complicated for candidates running for president this time. You know, Chris, I've spent my entire life on the Iowa caucuses and the New Hampshire primary.
Right.
Well over 20 years doing it. And you get a sense of the rhythm and how things generally work. And I got to tell you, this primary just feels different in terms of how it's playing out.
Yeah, it seems that the campaigns have a bit of a different approach. I want to stick with Sanders specifically for just a minute. Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren is in town tomorrow. Sanders is up there yesterday. He's talking about standing up to the corporate elite. We know he won the New Hampshire primary in 2016 with more than 60% of the vote. It's been tougher for him to gain traction this time around. You're up covering the New Hampshire campaigns. Is he still connecting with New Hampshire voters in the same way?
Well, sure. I mean, I think it's important to remember he is in second place. And another important thing to remember, I was with him last night. And the math of the primary this time, you know, is very important. You know, you mentioned he got 60% of the vote. If he just retains half of that vote, he's going to win the next New Hampshire primary. So while many campaigns are trying to build their support, he's just trying to retain that support. But yes, the burn, the energy, the enthusiasm is not the same as it was the first time, but he is still very much in the hunt.
Yeah, to that point, after the first debate, his campaign, it felt like, had a bit of a shakeup where they decided, okay, this message isn't resonating anymore, and they decided to go all in basically on the Medicare for All plan. I want to play a little clip of Sanders speaking about that this morning.
That's what the American people want, and we've come a long way in 4 years, poll after poll after poll. Says that if you ask the American people, do you want to expand Medicare to cover everybody, freedom of choice, doctor, hospital, no copayments, no deductibles, no out-of-pocket expenses, the American people overwhelmingly say yes.
So Sanders' campaign has kind of shifted focus to really use that as one of their trademark issues. Do you feel like that's a winning strategy in New Hampshire?
Well, look, I think if anything, they have disciplined the message around that one big idea. I'm going to get in trouble for saying this. But it does remind me, and I was thinking this last night watching him, this does remind me somewhat of how Donald Trump used the wall last time. It's not that other Republican candidates didn't support the concept of a wall or tightening the border, but he had a signature issue that played really well with his base, and he owned it, and he talked about it every single time. Bernie Sanders can talk about many different issues. His campaign last time was about a revolution and climate change. He can talk about any number of issues, but right now, he spends the bulk of his time talking about Medicare for All. And again, other candidates agree with him to some point. They have different plans, but he is certainly trying to put his stake in the ground on that one issue.
There is a key distinction there, though, I would say, that Senator Sanders actually has written legislation for Medicare for All as opposed to the wall as kind of a nebulous concept.
And the Mexicans are going to pay for the wall. And apparently,
right,
Americans will pay for Medicare for All. That was my snarky joke of the day.
I see. So according to – you actually mentioned that Senator Sanders has not spent a ton of time in New Hampshire, 538 – ran the numbers and found he spent about 4% of his campaign days in the Granite State through the end of July. Do you think he's doing enough there to maintain that support you're talking about?
Well, look, I mean, when I tried to say a little bit earlier that the primary has changed in the sense that Look, I think before we used to cover this campaign using metrics like visits, how much staff, or and how much organization in terms of endorsements that they're going to get, in terms of, you know, do they have momentum? You know, these days we are using different metrics. We're using national polling, which personally is offensive because that's not where the campaign is playing out. You can ask a person in New York State, or, you know, 1 out of 12 Americans live in California, and that's not where the campaign is playing out. So I don't know why we're asking their opinion, but we are in these national polls. We're using those metrics, small dollar contributions or metrics. And so in that sense, Bernie Sanders, who has the most small dollar contributions of any candidate in the race, and the DNC thinks that metric matters, he is certainly winning the campaign on that particular element. And that has absolutely, well, very little to do with how many trips he makes to New Hampshire.
This may require a bit of speculation on your part, but there's always been kind of a threshold where you expect candidates need to do well in early states, Iowa, New Hampshire, maybe South Carolina, in order to show they have a viable candidacy. Do you think that that's still the case?
Yes. So you have to look at this campaign in different phases. I've been concerned as a person who deeply loves the tradition of Iowa and New Hampshire. Obviously, I told you my background. I believe in the notion that at some place and at some time, a person who's about to make decisions on who wins or loses in the tax code, or who goes to war and whose families are impacted, that these folks who live in rarefied circles, senators, business leaders, governors, should have to engage in talk back and forth with everyday people, even if it's just for 4 or 5 months. I think that's a very important part of the process. But we have not seen that part of the process really play out the same way we have in, say, the last four decades, just because of the increase in the incentives in the system to get on cable news, to try to increase your fundraising base and travel around to different states, as the New York Times is really well documented how many states are involved now. And there's a good process for democracy in that. I'm not hitting that. I'm saying we lost that process. But that's in the early stage. I think later on, there's no doubt that we may have, you know, 9, 7, 8, 9, 10 candidates heading into the Iowa caucuses and the New Hampshire primary. And if you do not do well in those states, I don't see how you have any momentum to head to what is going to be a topic of many shows down the line, which is Super Duper Duper Tuesday, which is going to be California and Texas and a whole and Massachusetts and a whole host of states. And if you don't come into those states with momentum, I don't know how this is ever going to work for you. You literally cannot raise enough money to fight against it.
Yeah. So you mentioned the money. You mentioned the national polls. We're in this kind of interesting moment politically where to get to that 7, 8, 9 candidates, the Democratic field has to be cut in more than half. And that may happen in this next round of debates. The DNC has tightened the restrictions in order to qualify for the stage. You said that national polls, that it's concerning to use those for you. What do you make of this idea of the debate stage as kind of a cutoff for who's a viable candidate?
Well, look, I mean, you talk to even folks in Iowa and New Hampshire in the last two polls. We had Suffolk University Globe poll last week, and there's a Des Moines Register poll last month, and both of them said even folks in these early states really want this field cut down.
Right.
They want to get on with their choices. I think we also are seeing a natural winnowing of the process long before the DNC. I mean, we have a couple, maybe 4, 5, possibly 6 front runners, depending on how you want to define that. And then we have 20 other people who are lingling out at 0 or 1%. And the DNC is pretty much making it hard for those folks to make it to the next stage. You talk about the next debate. I mean, we're talking about the next deadline is August 28th. So we're really a couple weeks,
right,
to when these candidates really have to make some tough decisions. At the end of the day, you know, these candidates are working to meet those metrics from the DNC, and they're not out talking about their particular ideas. For example, the game now is to not have your best plan for rural communities. It's not have your best plan for healthcare. It's how are you going to spend $70 to $100 grabbing $1 and a donation on a Facebook ad. That is the game right now. That in trying to get on Rachel Maddow or whatever else in terms of a national cable platform.
Yeah. One of the candidates who's fighting that uphill battle that you're talking about is Massachusetts Congressman Seth Moulton. He said that his campaign has said that he's more focused on the New Hampshire primary than worrying about qualifying for the debates. That may be because he's been left off. But he's taking an interesting strategy. As you put it, he's telling New Hampshire voters what they're doing wrong. Can you tell us a little bit more about his strategy and what you make of it?
Well, it was a strategy, to be fair. It just really caught me when I was watching him yesterday. Part of his stump speech was, at one, not in an inconsistent way, but just here or there, he would start to kind of slam New Hampshire sort of way of life, highway liquor stores, for example. So I had a little fun and said, well, let's play rapid fire on some other New Hampshire traditions. And he played along, and good for him. But he's just trying to get noticed. You know, he was very, you go to a Bernie Sanders event like I did yesterday, you had one event, you had 350 people, the next event he had 400. You know, Seth Moulton went to an event that had a built-in audience because it was a chamber of commerce that had 36 people. So just to put that in context where we're at, this is really a campaign right now of the haves and have-nots, and that's part of the natural process.
Yeah, one of the candidates in the 2020 election who doesn't have to try to be noticed is President Trump. He'll host a rally Thursday in Manchester at Southern New Hampshire University Arena. A crowd of potentially 12,000, maybe more. Interesting, because you talked about on the ground meeting voters. We see a lot of intimate town hall events in New Hampshire. This is a different style. It's a style he really kind of introduced and owned in the 2016 campaign. What do you make of its effectiveness, and do you think it could change how candidates campaign?
Well, he already has. I mean, we can talk about this year feeling so much different, but we've been on a slide of where this notion of Jimmy Carter or Gary Hart knocking on doors, spending the night in people's houses and meeting people at coffee shops and having intimate house parties. You know, the last New Hampshire primary had two huge winners, or huge, to use both Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders' word, where Bernie Sanders won by 22 points, Donald Trump won by 20 points, and neither one really did a retail sort of campaign.
Right.
So they did the big rallies that really showed the momentum and support. And so this is pretty much an offshoot of how Donald Trump has always campaigned, particularly how he's always campaigned in New Hampshire. In fact, he said he didn't really want to spend much time on the ground when he ran last time, and he didn't. He didn't have much of a ground game. But again, he had a lot of people knew where he stood. Obviously, he may just be a total anomaly of all of American politics, or he may be the harbinger of the future.
All right. Last question. You've talked to a lot of New Hampshire voters as you've been covering these candidates. What's it going to take from candidates to connect with these voters? What are the real priorities you're sensing?
You know, you have two different things. You have people want to connect with you on a personal level. This is New Hampshire. What traditions are there? There's still, that's very much true. They want to agree with you on issues. They hear where you stand on issues, but on the back of their mind, you know, whether it's gun violence they talk about in schools, or it's going to be healthcare, whatever or the economy, whatever issue it is, they still want to know. How are you going to beat Trump? This is Democratic audiences, and every candidate has to answer that question in their own way.
All right. That's James Pindle, political reporter for the Boston Globe. James, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.